Coming up, got some of my first impression takeaways from day one of NBA Summer League. And then Jason Timpf from Hoops Tonight and Damon Rangula from Stratechery join me to discuss the Lakers, the Clippers, and the state of the Western Conference. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Let's talk NBA Summer League with my day one takeaways. I did not see every game. We'll have a lot of time this offseason to talk about what we learned in the Summer League, but I did watch, first of all, of course, Cooper Flagg versus Bronny James, Mavericks versus Lakers, and Cooper. First 4.5 minutes of the game, did nothing. And then he takes a quick little break, comes out in the first half, and he looked like Cooper Flagg. He was absolutely dominant, had a dunk and a pull up from the mid range. He was making plays on defense. And the play that stuck out to me the most was one that isn't going to be recorded as anything. It was this almost dunk in the half court where he took off from like outside of the restricted area and he just like got up there in a way that I think showed that maybe this guy is improving as an athlete. He's always been a very good athlete, a great athlete, but not like an elite athlete. And in that moment, it was like, well, wait a minute. Cooper turned 18 in December. He is still growing into what he'll become physically. And in that moment, I was like, well, wait a minute. Let's give this guy a lot of time to find out what he becomes as an athlete. And so good first impressions from Cooper Flagg. I thought Bronny James on the other end of that side, he fought. He, you know, got called for some stupid foul when he was defending Cooper Flagg in the corner, poked the ball away. He had like a scream. He was like, what, at the referee, and rightfully so. I thought Bronny, you know, we'll see. I wish he were 3-4 inches taller, but ultimately I came away impressed by Bronny in that matchup as well. I didn't see a lot of the New Orleans game, but from what I did see, I thought Derek Queen looked really overwhelmed. He looked slow-footed. He looked lazy, not getting back on defense. He had 7 turnovers in the game for a guy the Pelicans traded up 10 spots to go get by giving up an unprotected 2026 first-round pick from themselves or the Bucks. I mean, it's just game one, and he's just going to be a rookie. You're not going to overreact, but I didn't like what I saw from Derek Queen in that game from a body language perspective. He came into the NBA draft combine in May out of shape. I just, like, there's a lot of red flags here with Queen that I have my concerns. And of all the guys that I interviewed, as you heard on the podcast back in May, I thought he was definitely the least mature mentally as well. And so I think physically he's not mature, mentally he's not mature. And I think it's going to be a rough rookie year for him. Whereas for in the Sacramento game, Maxime Reynaud came out with like a huge first half. I only saw the highlights of this game. I did not watch this game live because I was waiting for Dallas versus Lakers. But in the videos that I did see online, and I look forward to watching the full game, Maxime Reynaud, dude, he looked like Dirk, Summer League Dirk out there with his fluidity on the perimeter. He had some nasty like ball fakes, pump fake, a little bit of a drive, find a cutter, another pump fake in the right wing. He drove, attacked the closeout, and then kicked it out to a shooter. This is why I was so bullish on Reynaud as a player, because I had him 15th on my board. At times I had him as high as, I think, 12, 13. Reynaud might be a senior. He might have questions defensively, but this dude just has so much skill offensively. I just don't see how there's any chance he's going to fail in the NBA. And to me, him falling in the second round to the Kings, he could easily end up one of the steals of the draft. I look forward to watching back that game in part because Devin Carter, box score at the time of recording, he's like 2 of 15 or something like that. A little bit worrisome for Devin Carter, last year's lottery pick. We also got some news today. Herb Jones signed an extension, 3 years, $68 million. Congrats to Herb Jones. Interviewing him when he was a rookie. He's from a town of like 2,400 people. He's a good kid. Very cool to see him get rewarded after all of his improvements as a shooter over the years and after the major injury he had last year as well. So for the Pelicans getting Herb Jones back, good for them and good for him as well. In the conversation you're about to listen to between me, Jason Timpf of Hoops Tonight, and Damon Rangula of Stratechery, we talked a little bit about Herb Jones as a trade target. Well, I mean, that might change now considering the extension. But the conversation all of it stays the same, regardless of the particular names mentioned with trade possibilities. But for Herb Jones, the Pelicans, that's one good thing that happened today. Derek Queen, not so good. So that conversation is coming up now between me, Jason, and Dumb, and we talk Lakers, talk Clippers, talk Western Conference. Who's going to be the team that could take down OKC, if anybody? Had some disagreements there. Really fun conversation. And throughout Summer League, I'm recording a ton of conversations with people that'll be coming out on the podcast feed next week and in the weeks to come. So look out for that. We'll be back soon. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me to discuss the state of basketball in Los Angeles, it's Jason Timp from Hoop Tonight and Dumb Rangula from Stratechery. How you guys doing? Both Lakers fans, by the way.
It is good to see you boys.
Good. Welcome.
This is the climate that I deal with every day in Tucson, Arizona. So you're getting a little taste of my life here.
I mean, I don't know how you deal with this dryness, Jason. But this is, I mean, all year long. For a weekend, I can come out here to Vegas.
I don't know, man. Give me this over East Coast humidity any day.
I agree.
Of the week.
Dude, I lived in Charlotte.
Come on.
It was worse. The summer was worse.
Come on.
I think humidity is very difficult to deal with, but Northeast is fine. It's the Southeast, Florida. You step out at Disney World and it's like you're stepped out of a shower.
This is the East Coast coastal eliteness.
I've been driving through Florida before and I've seen like nets wrapped around entire backyards. Yeah. And I'm like, this means humans should not live here.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What are we doing?
Well, we are currently in the middle of a desert right now.
That is true. That
is true. Las Vegas, here to watch basketball. We're recording this before Cooper Flagg makes his debut with the Dallas Mavericks against Bronny James and the Lakers. Can you imagine a year ago saying, oh, hey, Cooper Flagg will be wearing a Dallas Mavericks jersey, making his debut against the Los Angeles Lakers, led by Bronny James, whose father might not want to be there anymore because Luka Doncic is guy they want to build around now. Things have really changed, huh, Dumbin?
It's been an insane, like, 6 months kind of from the trade to where it's weird because the Lakers, the story around the Lakers and LeBron specifically, I mean, we're going to get into that, but has always been, okay, we are a couple pieces away, we're a piece away, go all in, trade this, trade that. And that's been the consistent thing for like 3-4 years now. The conversations are often the same. A small move here and there, but doesn't change everything. And there's like this angst that's built in the fan base, on the LeBron side of things, kind of with the timeline of the Lakers. And everything has reset. And I think that reset, we're feeling the effects of that right now. And this kind of weird awkwardness and angst around the whole organization and the direction of the team and the timeline of the team has entirely reset. And it's like a whiplash right now.
And DeAndre didn't help that, wearing his John Wick all black outfit.
You look good, man.
He did look sharp. And then in a radio interview, he's asked, well, have you spoken with LeBron or Luka? And Ayton says, oh, not really. I got a text from Luka. I know how it is in the offseason. People are with their families and all that. Bottom line, he did not hear from LeBron James. Does that say anything to you, Jason, about the state of this current Lakers situation?
It's especially bizarre because getting Ayton is a big get for the Lakers. Regardless of whatever concerns you might have involving his off-the-court issues and unprofessionalism, he's in a contract year and he's way more talented than anybody else they could have got at that position, and they got it without having to give up any kind of asset. And so you would think LeBron would be like jumping for joy, like ready to get excited and get invested. And it's just so bizarre because there's all of these bits of noise that are clearly signifying that something's off in that situation. Like, even just the contract situation. Like, this is the team that paid Kobe insane amounts of money to rehab his Achilles, and they didn't give LeBron the ability to opt out and take a 1+1 so that he could have a player option after this year. Like, it's just kind of a strange set of circumstances. Yet every time I keep coming back to, I just can't visualize him picking up and leaving Los Angeles in his 40s. Unless there was this obvious, like, we're gonna go win the title, and it just isn't there. And then when I look at LA, I'm like, Luka, I still think when Luka's like healthy and with it, he's the second best player in the world. So, like, that with DeAndre Ayton and with the ability to make an additional move this year and Austin Reeves and some of the depth that they have, like, it's hard to find a situation that makes sense for him to go to.
Look, I mean, I think with the Lakers, it is hard to find a situation for him to go to. But I also understand from his perspective, he's like, well, plan for 2027?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are we talking about?
So I get that. And as a Laker fan, I've been in that boat for many years now, kind of an accumulated fatigue of like, are we really going for it? Are we kind of just saying we're going for it? We have LeBron, we have Anthony Davis. You know, we never know if we're going to get a fully healthy LeBron and Anthony Davis season. We can't waste any of them. And that accumulated, I think, angst has reached this point. And it's the first time the Lakers have shown kind of a little bit of a kind of a pause of like, okay, let's take a deep breath. They added DeAndre Ayton, starting center. They could have came out of thin air, right? They didn't have to give up anything for him. It's a big get. But I think there's almost a, it's weird to say this, but almost like a maturity about looking at the landscape and being honest about yourself. Like, realistically, what trade or what move, forget individual players, just say a player type, a 3-and-D this, a star center, a star point guard. What is that piece that's going to bridge the gap between where the Lakers are right now and where OKC is right now? Where OKC, I think, last playoffs were, obviously, they won the championship, but I think they have multiple more levels that they can get to from organic growth. They didn't shoot the three ball that well all playoffs. Jalen Williams, right? He was dealing with an injury and just Chet's first playoff, et cetera, et cetera. And Houston loaded up. Denver had a great offseason. And so you're looking at the landscape. You're like, okay, the Lakers are good to very good. I actually completely agree with you. I think Luka this year is going to come into camp, hopefully looking good. And he's, you know, offseason looks like he's been working hard. And I think he should have come in with the mindset of I'm winning the MVP this season, right? Despite all that, are we sure that they're an all-in move with what they have available asset-wise right now, with what's in the market actually right now? Are they actually in a position to bridge the gap between them and best in the West? At least a conceivable chance to be best in the West.
Can I argue with you about
this?
Yes, let's
do it. Oh, so you called him a Laker fan earlier. He's a LeBron fan.
Yeah, let's get the record straight here, okay? So this is the part that I continue to come back to. Let's say they do make this type of deal. And I'm just going to throw a name out there, Andrew Wiggins. And I don't think this is a realistic outcome, but let's just pretend for the sake of argument, a starting caliber three that is a primary point of attack defender. That's one of the top, 10 to 15 guys that you would want to deploy on an opposing superstar from start to finish in a playoff series, right? In that situation, there's all of a sudden this balance. Like, Austin Reeves is fine if he's not your best point of attack defender, okay? He's your second best point of attack defender. I think there's a little bit more viability there. Ayton and LeBron, Ayton is an improved athlete at the center position compared to what they've had there in the past. Luka in better shape. That five, I still think, presents some real problems to some teams. And even, like, the teams that can really punish with physical size, Denver and the Lakers, those are teams that I think should at least look at the Thunder as vulnerable. That doesn't mean that they're going to beat them, but I think they should look at that as a winnable type of matchup. Now, Wiggins is 30, so there's a real drop-off coming there at some point in the next few years. I don't think the Lakers should go blow a bunch of assets on win-now moves. However, I think that having LeBron, who, by the way, was second team All-NBA this year, there was a stretch surrounding the All-Star break before Luka came, before he hurt his groin, where he was legitimately playing like a top-tier superstar in the NBA. If there is some value in the short term. So if you can find assets that aren't necessarily draft picks, but if you can move draft picks, move the pick, move Dalton, find a player that is in their mid-20s that has some short-term viability, if you can find that sort of thing out there, maybe it's like the Pacers stumble out the gate and you make a move after an Aaron Nesmith or somebody like that. Like, you can get somebody that's a legitimate two or three, that's an athlete that can hit a three, drive a closeout, guard the other team's best player. Herb Jones is another great example. If they can get that kind of guy, that's the kind of move to where you have an asset to where if something happened and you had to flip Herb for picks, you could, because he's an asset in his own right.
And I'll say the value of a short-term move is not just LeBron. Luka still hasn't signed an extension,
yeah,
right?
So Luka's been to a finals. Right. He's been to a Western Conference finals, right, without a co-star as great as LeBron still is. And so, like, that's where, like, I tend to side with the thing, the, like, I'm sure the clutch side of things here, where it's like, what are we doing here? So you have a guy who was second team all NBA and a guy who's been into an NBA finals just a year ago and has been to a Western Conference finals as a much younger player and who looks like he's going to come back in the best shape of his life. You're telling me you're not going to try to win a championship with these guys right now today? I'd be furious about that if I were in the LeBron camp. Personally, I still also feel that way as well, considering you have arguably two top 10 players at times. LeBron looked like a top five player still this past season as well. So I just think, to me, Austin Reeves, very, very good. I'm a big Austin Reeves fan. I think maybe there's some diminishing returns next to LeBron and next to Luka. So he's the guy I look at and say, well, do you want to give him up and look for upgrades involving him when it might?
Well, you mentioned Herb Jones. I think Austin Reeves would have to be in that trade.
I would think that I would look into that if I were the Lakers, and maybe you get something else back in that scenario as well.
So let me ask you this. Hypothetically, if the Lakers had their eyes set on a big, big, big piece, that maybe Austin Reeves goes from not being so diminishing returns, but in the post-LeBron era, there's another piece that comes in, and now Austin Reeves is your secondary player with Luka, and you have that big piece. And there's obviously one big piece that's been talked about, and what the Lakers have kind of positioned themselves to be, all these leaks about, oh, they want to preserve their cap space for 2027, et cetera, et cetera. The Lakers are, and always have been, and always will be, this is in their DNA, in their fabric, absolutely, of we are going to go big fish hunting. Herb Jones is not doing it for us, right? Andrew Wiggins, not doing it for us. Aaron Nesmith, not doing it for us. If they have their eyes set on the future of this franchise is Luka Doncic and the next great superstar to pair with him, and we just need 1 year to be a good to very good team and be happy with that.
Still maybe make a run, right?
As
constructed, you never know.
This is the first time in a few years I've been on that side. And by the way, I completely agree with LeBron being frustrated. I completely agree with that. He is in a year-to-year situation, and he will be for the remainder, however long he wants to play. That is his mindset. And I just think, listen, if they're positioning themselves for Giannis Antetokounmpo, just one random name,
I understand it. Because it is true. Like, he's the guy right now that everybody's talking about. Is Giannis going to want to stay or go? In 2027, Giannis can be a free agent, and so can Nikola Jokic, one of Luka's BFFs. And so there's two options for them. The star hunting, you know, that's what they are. The Lakers, teams have identities. The Lakers, they're a star brand. That's what they always go for. That's what they always have, going back to the days of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar when they get him from Milwaukee. And so with the Lakers, I'm sure that's their vision.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantees. There's never a guarantee with Luka. They were angling for Luka for years, and they ended up getting him sooner than I think they realized they could have.
So they had trade pieces, right? And I think this is my pushback to even the Wiggins discussion. Whatever the price is, and I do, you know, whatever the price that Miami is setting could be to the point where it starts to really eat into what your future flexibility can look like. And I think right now, just chilling out, seeing what Luka looks like, seeing what the team looks like, and maybe making a move at the deadline for a player who, like, let's say Miami has a terrible season, right, which they might, and you position yourself to maybe making a more amenable trade for Wiggins then, and also in the offseason, that's when you start really piling up the assets. They're in a position now, like, they should be trying to add pieces that are more attractive in the future as well. So there are still moves to be made. I just think big picture zooming out, I can understand the vision of this year being a bridge year between this era and the next. And I also understand why it's so awkward with LeBron, because I don't want to hear that if I'm LeBron.
So I think I'm with you. I would not make the Wiggins deal unless it was Rui Gabe and second round draft compensation. I would not include a first round pick in that deal. And by the way, if Miami said no to that, I understand. I mean, now you could talk yourself into it in the sense of like, okay, like Bam plays a lot of five. Obviously, Killian Ware's bringing a too big look for them, but Rui and Bam's games do complement each other pretty well. He did become a decent off-ball defender over the years with the Lakers. Rui can shoot the ball and drive closeouts. Like, he's got some utility. Like, I'm a Rui defender. I did the Denver series last year. I'd like to wipe out of existence, but other than that, it's been pretty solid. But like, yeah, I wouldn't give up first round draft compensation for that sort of thing. As far as the star thing goes, did the Lakers learn nothing from the Russell Westbrook experience? And specifically with Luka Doncic.
Did we just equate Russell Westbrook and Giannis?
No. Specifically.
That's true.
The Russell scraps. Specifically, I'm just talking about valuing role player talent. Yes. So especially with Luka. Luka is so unique in the sense that he is an offense unto himself. And I would actually argue role player talent it carries more weight with Luka. We've seen Luka go on a conference finals run with Jalen Brunson, a different version of Jalen Brunson. We've seen Luka make it to the finals with Kyrie Irving. And I like Kyrie Irving, but like Kyrie Irving's not what we consider to be one of the best stars in this league. The point is like all Luka needs is another ball handler who can get a bucket and run the show for these brief spurts. And other than that, it's dudes who can defend, knock down threes, run the floor. Like, that's what is valuable there. And so I would almost look at it with Luka as a different team-building strategy than just let's bring in another giant star to play it next to him.
It's an interesting point, and it does raise the question. Like, let's say that they did get Giannis or Jokic.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there's some diminishing returns there, to your point. Obviously, you're not going to say no to a guy like that. But Luka has always been a guy, ball on his hands, end of story. Like Luka in a two-man game with Jokic, I'm not sure what that would look like. I don't know. That'd be a version of Luka we have never ever seen before, right?
I agree. The Giannis part, they would complement each other a little bit more.
Screen and roll, get to the rim. But Giannis isn't a great screen.
What we hope from with the Lillard,
yeah, right? But it didn't work out the way it should have.
Yeah.
The other tricky thing, and I think this is something to keep an eye on with the Lakers with LeBron and Austin this year, is the catch and shoot piece, because LeBron and Luka and Giannis all get guarded by the same type of player, a big, strong forward that can move their feet a little bit, right? And so any action involving Luka and a Jokic Luka and LeBron is most likely going to be a switch. And this is one of the big things I have my eye on for the Lakers this year. Like, LeBron and Austin need to be in the lab all summer working on their catch and shoot jump shooting, because that was a big problem for them in this fit. It is a little bit clunky if those dudes aren't knocking down catch and shoot threes in the mid to low 40s. Jokic in particular, okay, they're not going to switch a lot of action. There might be some viability there. But to your point, it's a diminishing return, because you're partnering the best shot creator I've ever seen with one of the five best that we've ever seen. And there is a diminishing return there. And so, yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, I think I'm with you. I'm not saying don't trade for Giannis. Giannis, I think, makes some sense. But, like, I do think that there is, with Luka specifically, an extra value on a Herb Jones type. Herb Jones is going to get a lot of wide open corner threes playing alongside Luka Doncic. You know what I mean?
So you were talking earlier, and I'm just curious, with this current CBA and the financial constraints around the league, is it harder to trade for those pieces than ever? Because I also wonder, like, a lot of times when we talk trades, we don't really know what the asking prices are and what trades. Like, there's not been a lot of movement for a Herb Jones type trades in the market, because I think teams are guarding those more and more. Is that also part of this? Like, what's going on this summer with the Lakers, that it's just those kind of trades are not available?
I think that's part of it. I had Bobby Marks on before recording with you guys for a podcast that'll air sometime next week. And Bobby, I asked him straight up, you know, what did the Cavs have to do to go get LeBron?
Yeah.
And just to get, you know, the cap expert's opinion on how difficult things would be. And we already know they'd have to give up $70 million in contracts, hit under the second apron, in order to bring on LeBron. And they'd have to remove Garland and Allen and Strus and maybe a little bit more as well in order to make that happen. It's extremely difficult to make big moves. And so I think that is an element of it here with the Lakers, where it's like, well, you sacrifice your flexibility in the future and you have to give up a lot in order to get something in return that may not actually make you significantly better. Hold that thought and we'll be right back. I think with the Lakers, that is in part the position that they're in now, whereas the Clippers, of course, they had some easy moves. Getting Brook Lopez was easy, just like getting DeAndre Ayton was easy for them. Drafting Yannick Cohen-Leidenhauser, a center, with the 30th pick in the first round, that is an easy move to make. The Lakers trading up to get Adu Thiero, fairly easy. These are easier moves that both of these franchises have made as they try to take a leap. And I just think for the Lakers, they have a little bit more flexibility still right now, where they're just leaving it out there. And that's where probably the source of the frustration is for the Lakers, whereas Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, James Harden, they can look at their team and be like, okay, yeah, we've made some really good improvements right here. We have a lot more flexibility. Jason, do you think the Clippers or Lakers are better positioned to win a championship in 2026?
I lean the Lakers still, even though I think the Clippers have, I have a ton of respect for the Clippers. I have a ton of respect for the way they're run. I think Ty Lue's a great coach.
Setting up that criticism.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big believer in Kawhi Leonard. I think most of his issues have been health related. Yeah. But I still think, and I've seen this big wave of takes over the course of the last 6 months centering around depth, and I don't want to sit here and pretend like depth doesn't matter in the NBA. It certainly does. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander won the title this year. The Celtics, you know, Tatum wasn't the best basketball he ever played, but they had five dudes who on the open market would fetch over $30 million a year. Previous year, Jokic, Steph, Giannis, LeBron. You still need one of those guys. And I still think Luka, like that Dallas Mavericks roster that went to the finals, really good roster. It wasn't what we would consider to be a like talent in position. Like they weren't going to just win on paper. They were winning off of guys excelling in roles off of what Luka does. And so Luka, both in a vacuum as a superstar, but also the way he matches up with some of the teams at the top. Like I like his ability to attack bigs in space and to attack smalls. I think it's a useful trait to have against an Oklahoma City, against even a Houston. And so with that being the case, like I still think there's like this star upside with LeBron and Luka in LA that the Clippers just don't quite have. And I'm a big believer in James Harden. Harden getting the paycheck to me is such a testament to what his skill set is. Like another paycheck, because guess what? Throw him in 1,000 pick and rolls every year, and he's going to get, you know, a 115 offensive rating out of that action because he's just still so surgical there and there's so much value there. But I just don't see the same upside.
You know, just not in a game seven.
I mean, hey, like you got to respect those Rockets actually going for it against those Warriors teams, which is kind of what teams are thinking now. It's like, well, OKC, they win the title. They just re-signed SGA, re-signed Jalen Williams, re-signed Chet Holmgren.
Yep.
They drafted last year Nikola Topic, who shined in the Utah Summer League. You know, we'll see him here in Vegas. They drafted Thomas Sorber, who I had as my top-ranked big and perfectly fits into that Isaiah Hartenstein role at some point in the future when Hartenstein leaves and they need to replace that salary number. So, like, OKC's built to win for a long, long time. And obviously things can change, but their draft pick situation makes them unique. Houston reloaded.
Yep.
Other teams in the Western Conference. Denver, I think the Michael Porter Jr., the Cam Johnson improvement is big. Jonas Valanciunas is the best backup center of the Jokic era. De'Ron Holmes, who tore his Achilles on that floor out there a year ago, also could be the best backup center of the Jokic era as well. So Denver's better. Houston's better. Other teams in the West are better. We'll see about Minnesota. Maybe Terrence Shannon fills the Nikhil Alexander-Walker minutes and they end up better with more of an offensive presence. Maybe Rob Dillingham takes those minutes alongside Mike Conley and becomes the spark plug that Tim Conley valued trading up a year ago in the draft. So the West is loaded. Like, duh. Like everybody knows that. And so I think, you know, when you think about the Lakers and the Clippers are going for it. The Lakers are like, we'll stick with what we have. And that's where I look at these teams. I'm like, yeah, but are we sure OKC's unbeatable? It's hard to go back-to-back, man. It's
under
really
any circumstances.
Yeah. Exactly.
I would say, so if Luka comes back and looks like an MVP, a lot of these conversations become...
So you wait until then.
I wait until then.
He proves it.
And also, what is on this roster currently starts to look a lot better if that's the Luka we get. We were talking offline earlier. One of the things the Lakers didn't have last year was a lot of downhill pressure. And that really reared itself against the Minnesota team. Like, they had nothing. And Luka, though, if Luka gets into the kind of shape that he's looking like he's going to get in, and he is able to be a downhill player again, he was not that at all last year with the Lakers. All of a sudden, the floor looks different. The players look different. Everything starts to looking different. And the ceiling of this team may raise just based on that. And I will say the Clippers, yes, they are going for it. But they're at the tail end of whatever they're building.
No choice.
There's nothing left, right? There's literally no choice. Like,
but
their timeline is 1 or 2 years, and then this is all going down, right? They're going to tear it apart. They'll be in a position to make a case to Giannis and Jokic about, hey, do you want to be in the next era? But they're not confronted with a young MVP-level player who's still well early in his prime. And so the timelines are naturally very different. And the Clippers have done a great job. And I echo everything he said. I really respect the way they're run. Ty Lue is maybe my favorite coach in the NBA. Like, I think he's completely underrated.
Lakers weren't so cheap, he'd be their coach.
Oh, dude, there's so many stories.
Maybe the worst thing from that era was them letting Ty Lue.
Him and Alex Caruso. Like, yeah, I mean, those just two, like, those just two, like, come yeah. on, man.
So, maybe with new ownership, Lue would have been the coach, right? And maybe he will be someday.
Maybe.
You never know, right?
Yeah, maybe. And no, JJ's good. JJ's good. Although, JJ, we were joking, like, the DeAndre Ayton signing has been great. But JJ's patience is going to be tested like more than ever.
Aneurysm. Jeez. I feel bad in some ways for DeAndre. Like, he's going to get glares from Luca.
Oh yeah.
I know this is the perfect environment. If Ayton's going to resurrect his career anywhere, this is the team and this is the situation for it to happen.
It's going to be spectacular. It's just either going to be failure or success. It's going to be spectacular.
It's true.
Well, tell me with Ayton, he gets traded by Phoenix, Jason. Booker didn't want him. Chris Paul didn't want him. Kevin Durant didn't want him, I should say, at that time. He goes to Portland. They don't want him. They draft another center in Yang Hansen. They draft Klingon last year. They get rid of Ayton despite him still being fairly young. For a lot of people who don't watch Blazers games, Jason, can you explain why he became a guy that wasn't wanted by his last two teams? And is there any reason for optimism with him and the Lakers?
Well, I mean, there are on-court issues. Obviously, his motor runs hot and cold. There are criticisms of his screening. Portland ran him in a comically deep drop coverage because they didn't trust him to do his job, basically, in action. Their defense was substantially worse with him on the floor versus off. All of that's true. I look at the situation in LA as essentially the right time to make a bet on Ayton, because he's 26 and he's at a fundamental crossroads in his career. If he messes this up by being unprofessional off the court, by not taking care of his body, by not doing what the Lakers need him to do. Yeah, exactly. No icy roads. Yeah, exactly. So if he blows it, he could very easily never get a legitimate long-term deal in the NBA again. But we, like, one of the most fascinating things to me over the last few years is, like, starting center money is real. Like if you're a middle of the pack starting center in the NBA, you're getting $25 million a year. So with that being the case, like, if he goes in and his skill set meshes perfectly with Luka and LeBron, specifically even with the screening issue, Luka is one of the most gifted people at getting a defender out of position and on his hip even without a screen. So, like, if Ayton's slipping too fast out of screens and rolling hard, I think that fits reasonably well with Luka. I think it'll be a bigger issue with someone like Austin, something to keep an eye on, or LeBron. But with Luka, there's a ball screen fit that's supernatural. He's just so much more talented than anybody they've had at the position there. There's a version of this story where he puts up, you know, multiple 20-20 games, a few 30-15 games, averages close to 20 points and 12 rebounds a game, and signs literally a four-year, $120 million deal. At the end of the day, that is a seriously achievable outcome for him. Now, at that point, I don't want him on my team anymore. but for that first year, I think it could be pretty nice.
Now, I think one of the things with Denver that they have not had since prior to the contention years, Jokic and Nurkic, two fives.
Yep.
Now they have Jokic, Jonas Valanciunas, it seems like he'll be back, and then De'Ron Holmes. To me, that front court flexibility is something that Jokic has not had during this contending era. And this is kind of the theme, Jason. Teams that can play with two bigs or play with one big or play with no bigs, and they have the ability to play with Aaron Gordon at the five when Jokic is off the floor as well. So I think Denver's front court flexibility to me is another thing that I'm really bullish about with Valanciunas, Holmes, next to Jokic. What do you think about kind of that general theme of two bigs and lineup flexibility in the front court now?
I've generally looked at that as the being a shape-shifting team is one of the most important parts of surviving four rounds of the playoffs. Because, I mean, we've dealt with this with, like, Rui over the years. There's certain teams where it's like you put Rui out there, he's a monster. You put him out there against Golden State and he has to track shooters on the perimeter, it's just a disaster. It just doesn't work. Having different guys that can play different styles, like, there's going to be a version. I like how Jonas is not Jokic, but Jonas plays a style because he's willing to take pick-and-pop threes, because he can kind of be a dribble handoff fulcrum towards the top. He allows – because Denver would go out with these centerless groups without Jokic, and then the other team would just switch everything. And then it would turn into this, like, Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, let's pick on matchups and just play one-on-one basketball. And this allows them to have like a look where they can maintain a similar offensive approach to what they play like with Jokic. But then De'Aaron Holmes brings the floor running, the more reliable three-point shooting, more of like a switchable type of big. It's a different type of look that they can go to in that situation.
Could play to him, assuming, I mean, he tore his Achilles a year ago. Assuming he retains some of the flexibility he had as a switchable big that we saw his last year at Dayton, he could play some four as well. Certain lineups, put him as a four, play with two bigs, and that flexibility is, Houston is a different type of flexibility because they have a ton of bigs too. They have Steven Adams, they have Clint Capella, they added him. They obviously have Alperen Şengün, they can play with two bigs, but they don't necessarily have that switchable guy like De'Aaron Holmes. And I think with Houston,
Kevin Durant.
Yeah. KD, maybe it is KD. Maybe it is KD. He is 7 feet tall, he's 6'11", whatever he's listed at. So maybe it is KD, but you know, KD's not necessarily quite prime levels defensively either.
Yeah. No, and I'll say this. I think Jason's 100% right about that. To survive 4 playoff rounds, you know, you need to have all these looks. But I also think, like, if you look at what it takes now to get through a regular season, keep everybody fresh, Denver's in a position to be keep their lineup fresh for the first time since their title year, where they really... I mean, like, we'll see.
I mean, you hope Adelman isn't going to be a Malone
right.
Malone had guys who could play. They weren't necessarily good, but he could have invested in the youth. He just didn't.
Right. And I think so. We saw something new this playoffs, and maybe it was because Indiana and OKC just had, like, those kinds of, like,
10 deep,
which is not something we've ever, like, I remember ever seeing. Both teams go that deep into the rotation.
You'd see teams go all finals sometimes.
Right. You see JJ Redick go 5, right? I mean, it's just like, and so I think Houston and Denver, that is the commonality of what they're doing, is depth and playable depth, like actually playable depth that'll help them in the regular season. And for the first time, we're discussing depth in the playoffs.
Things have changed quite a lot.
I think it helps when you have a coaching staff that preaches these details every single day from day one of camp, I think you get more viable minutes out of deeper rotation guys. It's an investment from the beginning of the year. And I think that's part of the issue, like, for instance, with the Knicks, is they practiced playing playoff basketball from day one, and that came with the limitation of, like, oh, man, we don't have anybody we can trust. And I think there's a downside to that.
I will also say, Rick Carlisle specifically, he, even in, like, playoff games, gave players wiggle room to make mistakes. And I think that is all, like, goes to coaching. It's like, are we actually building these guys up to get them ready and not looking over their shoulder all year?
Obi Toppin in the beginning of game one just completely falling apart. And then he was like a laser the rest
perfect
of that game.
Perfect example. Yeah, perfect example.
You mentioned the Knicks. I mean, I think, like, the regular season, it's valuable to prepare for the playoffs by playing the way you hope to play. But also, I think it's worth experimenting sometimes too, though. Like, we didn't see any over the course of the year, Karl Anthony Towns plus Ariel Hakpoti or Jericho Sims or the other bigs they had prior to Mitchell Robinson returning. And then when Mitchell Robinson comes back, we barely saw any Mitch plus Kat until the playoffs, where it's like, oh, damn. Like, we actually should have gone to two bigs sooner. And they go to it in the postseason. Dagnall with OKC, he talked like in the middle of March. At one point, Hartenstein and Holmgren wasn't really meshing the way you'd hope for. And he's like, well, I mean, we're preparing for the playoffs, and we know we're going to have to play different styles of lineups. We know we're going to have to play two bigs. That's why sometimes we're doing this in situations we probably shouldn't do it, because we're trying things out and we're trying to take different shapes. And it's like, oh, yeah, like, this is what you have to do.
They do not beat Denver without that look. Yeah. They're like Hartenstein playing Jokic's right hand with Chet behind, like, was a game. The first team I've ever seen make Jokic look bad 3 nights in a row. Like, it was crazy.
And then they play Caruso, and they're swarming at game 7. Like, the amount of different ways they played in that
series. Painful. Caruso, man, so painful.
And that's the thing with OKC. Like, we have had seven straight teams that have not repeated. With OKC, of all the seven, are they the team best set up to go back-to-back, or no, considering everybody talked about Boston the year prior, they were in a weaker conference, the West is loaded? Dumin, what do you think?
All this year, I tried to bring down OKC, saying they're too young, they can't do it, it's too early, they're too cute, everybody loves them too much, you know, I'm not buying this, like, everybody getting together for the post-game interviews, and I'm like, come on, these guys are not ready for it. The one thing I'll say is, these Gen Z, like, the Gen Z can't do it, you know? the thing that I look at, and I was kind of reviewing the playoffs again, kind of zooming out and seeing how the teams played. I don't think OKC played up to even what their heights were in the regular season last year. And if you look at the three-point percentage, Jalen Williams injury, et cetera, I think they have growth there from even what they showed last year. And then the internal growth of this is going to be Chet's second playoff run. Jalen Williams more experienced. I mean, SGA was phenomenal. And so you look across the board, I just think they have so much more room to get better. Forget all the assets and forget that. I'm talking about their roster as it stands right now, I think has enough growth to where I do think that Denver can put a good fight to them. Houston can put a good fight to them. But I still think they have, like, they should be the clear favorite. And if any team's going to repeat in this era, it's going to be them, because otherwise I don't see how anybody can do it.
I actually disagree. So I do think they should be the favorite. I do think they have a very good chance. But I don't think growth as a basketball player is linear. I think that sometimes it can be a little jagged, especially even with like jump shooting growth. Like you can be a great jump shooter and then all of a sudden go back to 3% in a year just because it doesn't come together that year. I thought Boston last year was the safest bet, and they didn't, which is exactly why, like, you don't know. And the reason why with Boston is they were all vets, all still more or less in the prime of their careers, and all of them were so experienced, and it almost felt like 2024 was them, like, breaking through. Now, mind you, Boston succumbed to injuries. Like, Porzingis wasn't close to himself. Tatum obviously goes down. There's no guarantee that the Knicks win that series just because they lose game four. Now, Tatum going down closes that deal, but Boston would have won game five in all likelihood. And then it's like, hey, can Boston win in New York one time? Absolutely they can. So, like, I it's just a testament to just how difficult it is to win an NBA championship. But I lean slightly towards that Celtics team because I do think that that Oklahoma City team showed a lot of vulnerabilities. I do believe in their internal improvements, but I think that a lot of the other teams in the West got better as well.
West is loaded. I look forward to seeing how things develop over the course of this next year and over these couple of next days and weeks. I mean, it was, what, 5 years, 6 years ago, way here for Zion Williamson and his debut. There's a literal earthquake.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then a couple, you know, hours later, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are playing for the Clippers. And who knows? Maybe tonight, Cooper Flagg's debut, we'll get some.
How did that go? Paul George and Kawhi.
Not so great. Hey, things can feel good and then they don't work out. Dumin, Jason, thank you guys for joining. We appreciate it.
This is so much fun. It was good to see you guys.
Thanks, this guys. Is fun.
Big thank you to Jason Timp and Dumin Rangula for joining me on today's episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Thanks to Madison for coming out to Vegas and producing today's episode, and to the whole team back wherever they're living. We're producing this episode as well. We'll be back again next week or sooner if there's an emergency podcast opportunity discussing everything going on around the NBA. Enjoy Summer League, everybody.